Okay, show. I'm very excited to have my guest back today. He has a great book called Rules for Defeating Radicals, which really breaks down how to fight this battle for the minds and hearts and critical thinking and everything that was spawned on the left through the Saul Alinsky Rules for Radicals. It has been a great book for many, many people to help figure out what is going on and how to decipher how to actually go about fighting this battle in a way that's productive and is good for our country and our future. I have him back because last time we had such a great conversation, great feedback, and there's so much more to discuss. So thank you for joining me, Chris Adamo.
And as always, it's just wonderful to get to talk to you again.
You too. And in our last show, I got great feedback. A lot of people bought the book and felt really empowered by it because you have a way of just going through kind of this kind of upside down speak that is used a lot. And I want to get into a bunch of things. But the first thing I wanted to ask you, because I just saw it, Bernie Sanders was asked by, I guess, Bill Maher over the weekend to tell the difference between equality and equity. And we talked about last time how they did the little switcheroo and put equity in there without anyone really noticing until they started putting in all the DEI policies. Bernie Sanders could not answer this. I mean, it was really shocking because you and I talked about it last time. Can you just explain to the audience the difference between equality and equity?
Okay, well, if I'm understanding this correctly, and I may be going off on a rabbit trail, you might have to correct me here, but equality as far as who we are as a nation, and frankly, as far as who we are before God, is we're all created in his image. We all have in America, we should all have equal protection under the law. We should have equal opportunity to pursue the future and things like that. Whereas equity is actually the wolf in sheep's clothing for what they're actually wanting is collectivism. Collectivism, they're saying equality of results, equality of outcome. And again, I compare that to cattle in a feedlot. You all get fed the same. You all have the same day-to-day life.
Right.
You don't have this pursuit of happiness because that's outside of the picture and your happiness may be different than mine. And by the way, we won't go into this part because nobody wants to talk about it. The retirement program for cattle in a feedlot is just really not very good. Okay. And that is what the goal of this leftist globalist effort is to get all of us to where we're the cattle, we're doing whatever we're supposed to do to feed the monster. And then aside from that, keep your mouth shut, because if you take off in some direction that, you go buy yourself an RV and I don't have enough money to, then we don't have equity. Right. And therefore some crime has been committed and something needs to be taken away from you to be given to me so that I have the same. What ultimately happens is, as Rush Limbaugh used to say, is you have equally shared misery.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like that is the goal, obviously, at this point.
We look at the destruction going on across the country to everything that's outside of that.
Yeah, it's shocking. Every day it just gets more and more shocking. And, I pose to you because you also write a lot of great comments and a commentary that is really thought-provoking. And the biggest problem I'm finding is a lot of people no longer have critical thinking skills, or they don't use them, or they just default to, and it's on both sides, but it's also this idea that you don't want to upset anyone, you don't want to say anything, you don't want to rock the boat. So even if you're feeling something inside in your heart is true, you believe it, or you don't believe something, say you don't believe men can have babies, or that it's okay to do that, to teach, children things that they're not even ready to learn, or any of this. Most people, it appears at this point, are taking the default position of saying nothing. And you feel that, and I feel that that is the wrong position to take, because then as long as we say nothing, nothing happens. And what happened last week, I wanted to get your take on too, is Scott Adams, that people loved for decades, Dilbert, was the most popular person. He, and I believe that this is happening with many people. He just has millions of followers on Twitter. And his break, his end of the line to just say something came very publicly. It came very fast. And the cancel culture retribution came just as quickly. And they canceled Dilbert all over the place. They tried to cancel him. Now he's branded a racist. But what really happened is he saw a poll that came out that was a reputable poll that said that a large number, upwards of 45% of Black Americans don't feel that it's okay to be white. And mm-hmm. so, which is shocking to begin with. And I think most people take a step back, even that are listening to this and think, is that real? It is real.
Yeah, and it's going on.
And it sent him over the edge. And he really just said, if that is true, because I also believe, just from what I was reading, from what he was saying, he's saying we give all this money, we're doing all this stuff. Everything's now diversity, equity, inclusion. Since George Floyd, billions of dollars, billions of tax dollars, all of this going straight to the Black community, excluding the white community openly. All of this is happening. For decades, we've been putting money into the inner cities that goes right to the same gangsters and hustlers and disappears, never helps that community. Defund the police. All this stuff is affecting everyone, especially them. And he said, if they don't want white people to be around them, if they don't think that it's okay, if they're not accepted, why are we doing all of this? He went a little farther than that. I don't have to repeat it. But the truth is, I believe that a lot of people are feeling this way. I feel that it's by design. You wrote the.
It's absolutely by design.
Talk about that, because you wrote the seminal book for pulling apart that Rules for Radicals. And people have to remember that was the Weather Underground, the actual domestic terrorists that now have places all over our government.
Yes.
They're all over our academia. But I believe this is what they wanted, is a race.
It absolutely is. I really, now I got to be very delicate because this sounds like I'm disagreeing with you here. I want to go way back to something you said, because first of all, before anybody has any doubts about it, you're doing a fantastic job. Okay. Now, having said that, you said something early on that it's one of those things that they have fed to us.
Okay,
and we have hit back, or we've come back with it as if it's a given truth, and it's not. You said both sides, okay? You know, it's both sides are guilty, but then you went right on, and this is where you were absolutely on the money. You went right on to say, we're keeping silent, and they're spewing nothing but hatred and venom. And that is the truth, okay? It really isn't both sides. Now, what we've got to do with this is define what do we mean by both sides. Okay. If you're going to talk Republican and Democrat, you're talking, General Flynn loves the term, and he's absolutely right, the uniparty. Mm-hmm. And if we have an extra hour, I'll tell you all the goings on in Wyoming in just this past week, because we're seeing a major breakthrough on that coming from good conservative patriots in Wyoming. But it isn't both sides, and we've got to be really careful. One of the things I talk about in my book is the phony moral equivalencies they come up with. So if they offend you with the truth, or I'm sorry, if they offend you with a lie, then you're just as bad if you offend them with the truth. No, in one case, the person's lying, in the other case, person's telling the truth. It's not both sides doing offensive things to each other. It's a one side, and I define, I say it's not both right and left. I say it's the left, I classify as the Marxist globalists. Right. The rights, you have your conservative patriots. Okay, now if we want to argue over those terms, but those on the right are not trying to corrupt the opposition. We're trying to enlighten the opposition. There is no moral equivalency between us speaking the truth when they get mad versus them spewing, you know, venom and moral depravity, which should make us mad. Okay. Yeah. The problem is we've accepted that. I use the term last time we were talking of battered conservative syndrome, like battered wife syndrome. Right. They commit the crimes and we start trying to take the blame for it. Well, maybe we need to find middle ground with these people. Now, your layout of the spectrum of there, what I see is you have about 20% on our end that are staunch, unshakable conservatives. Maybe about the same amount that are just totally depraved, unhinged leftists on the other end, 60% in the middle who really would like to, you know, they're the people you meet in the store and they hold the doors for you and stuff. They'd like to live a normal life. They turn on CNN and they hear this twisted version of the world and they don't know what to sort through. And what we have got to do, one of my rules is don't try to persuade the leftist leaders. They already know what they're doing. They already know that it's corrupting, that it's going to destroy society. That's the goal. It's what we got to do is we got to speak to those 60% in the middle. Now, some of those people call themselves Democrats. I say in this day and age, being a Republican does not make you inherently righteous. Okay. And I want to be unequivocal about that. Being a Republican does not mean you're Christian. It does not mean you're conservative. But being a Democrat means that you've institutionally embraced all of the leftist, globalist, countercultural rot. And so you have to be careful if you're a Democrat in the modern age and you're oblivious, you don't really know, you're naive or whatever. Those people we need to inform, okay? Yeah. Not for the purpose of saying you need to go from being a Democrat to being a Republican, but for the purpose of saying you need to forsake that leftist agenda that you're actually a minion of, and you need to embrace the things that we know, you know, the Judeo-Christian founding of the country, the Constitution, the rule of law, and the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that we have sought in this country, and that by which this country was forged into greatness and which has flourished.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, because, you know, it's weird. I've been in 22 states. I travel around a lot. I try to talk to as many normal people that live in those areas as possible. And what I find—
when you get to Kansas City, by the way, you need to make sure we know about that. So
yeah, I will. Believe me. But but even Kansas City, everywhere, Wyoming, everywhere you've talked about it, it's like, you will meet Democrats. They say, well, I'm a JFK Democrat. And I'm thinking, well, mm-hmm. they need to be a Republican now. But, yeah. They hold on to that. And it's like, but how can you still say that? And what's ultra disturbing to me, too, is that a lot of people don't realize that we've been infiltrated all over the nation by a group called the Democratic Socialists of America. Mm-hmm. And they are not Democrats. They don't even pretend to be on their website, in their literature. You know, I always say, don't forget about the German Socialist Workers' Party, which are the Nazis. They are very similar. And AOC, the whole squad. But what's also happened is with a lot of the Open Society, George Soros and other money, this group has been infiltrated throughout all of our local politicians and communities.
Through little and big governing right. agencies, attorneys general, prosecuting attorneys, and things like that. And again, this is why I warn against when I hear a concept of, you know, finding middle ground with these people, because if we try to find the middle with them, all they do is move their goalposts that much further to the left. And at that point, we're trying to find middle ground. Well, we're moving further to the left. And what we've got to do is we've got to stop, regroup, and go back and say, where do we get our concepts of right and wrong, of legal and illegal? We don't get them from whatever the latest counterculture of right. fad is. We get them from biblical principles, from constitutional principles, which were derived by the founders in an effort to reflect a biblical concept of governing people into American law. And if we go back to those things, we're always going to be going back to the goalpost on our side, rather than trying to continually accommodate these people, try to be agreeable, because we don't want to be disagreeable.
Right.
We've got to differentiate. And this goes, you know, the question about where do we find middle ground? That's something we should absolutely do. And that's something we should never do, depending on the situation. I sound like I'm contradicting myself.
No, you don't.
Look at the issue.
Right.
These days there are a couple of issues that are absolutely defining. That there is no common ground, you know, the homosexual agenda, the abortion agenda. There, you can't. No. The only way to be in agreement with them is to be a little bit or a lot wrong, right along with them. You can't do that. And so we have got to. What issues do we stake our claim on? Basic issues of the rule of law, of the sanctity of human life, you know, of the dignity of a human being, moral uprightness, and things like this. And we have a framework for these things that has worked. We also have a framework that they've always tried to implement, going back to Babylon, that has not worked. And so we have the two camps. And when it comes to looking for common ground with the people in the middle, we need to show them why. Here's what we want to do. Here's why it isn't about hurting some poor six-year-old boy that thinks he wants to be a girl. It's not about hurting him. It's about keeping him from letting his body be mutilated and right. poisoned with unnatural hormones. And then when he's 20 years old, if it's legal and he still wants to do it, well, frankly, if he still wants to do it, he needs mental help first. But you're not in the same position as you are if he's 6 years old and he's got a drag queen teacher trying to get him to do it.
Yeah.
And so we've got to stand our ground on these things and say, no, I will not bend on those. And you in the middle, you know, Joshua 24:15, choose ye this day who you will serve. As for me and my house, we serve the Lord. You've got to make a decision one way or another. And we don't have the latitude on everything to just, you know, push past certain subjects and get along, because certain subjects absolutely define us.
You know, that's so great that you said that. And believe me, I like being wrong, so I appreciate that. No, I do, because I need the audience to understand this too. The truth is that there are certain things that you can't find middle ground. And there's also, like you're saying, I've seen them move the goalpost every time. Yeah. Like I can't remember her name, Jay Powell, somebody wrote a tweet. She said, for Women's History Month, we must include trans women.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, and this is somebody sitting in a Congress. I believe she's one of the Democratic Socialists of America. She's in that crew with the squad. But I see this and I'm like, of course, in my head and heart, I'm like, no, we don't. But I just feel like enough people aren't saying that. But like you're saying, that's one of those places where it's like you would be lying to yourself, lying before God and all of that. And a lot of people are choosing to opt out. What I am also noticing, because I talked to some college kids, which very sad that's going on our college campuses, which is why I think if you are watching this, Chris's book is especially good if your children are in college or high school right now and are being bombarded, because the universities are out of control right now. And what I'm finding, it's very sad to me, is a lot of college students, even higher level, even grad students, aren't speaking at all. And we have that problem too. This is why when I asked you, I was less talking about that and more asking about how to... I think, like you said, most people that align with you and I, they don't want to fight. They just want to debate in a healthy way and maybe come to an understand a mutual respect of you think what you think, I think what I think. We can both live together on this planet anyway.
Which presumes that the other person has the same interest. And that can be a deadly wrong presumption, because those people in the middle, they may have that, even though they're confused, like you said, you know, these college kids and stuff. Yeah. But the person on the other end of the spectrum, you know, I had two premises of my book that I always want to repeat to people. Great. That number one being the Alinsky strategy only works on those who allow it. And number two, leftists never care about any cause they claim to champion. Okay. And if we can understand those two, and that's what really the whole rest of the book is about, if we can understand those two, we're immune to it. Okay. The problem is they have a million different ways of getting us to allow it. And one of their biggest is to, you know, well, let's all hold hands and find common ground. And what they're not saying they're coming to our side. You know, common ground between us and them is us coming to their side to some degree, because we want to show that we're tolerant. We want to show that we're loving, et cetera. But it always amounts to pulling the culture, pulling the debate, pulling everything in their direction.
Right. You're absolutely right. And I've seen it. I have friends trying to do this on campuses, Common Ground Campus. Human Events is behind that. And the hard time is once they get a college campus to agree, then all the leftist groups, you know, threaten the people that want to be involved. Yeah.
There is no interest in common ground on their part. It is all a matter of submission. And, you know, any cause that they get on, including let's find common ground, it's all about how can we exploit the situation to the ultimate end, which is amassing power in their camp. And yeah. Does that sound like us versus them? Oh, that's bad, Chris. You're hateful. You're intolerant. No, that's the truth.
Exactly. It's sad. It's the truth. And I don't know how many people there are, but there never were. And it's just more a matter of that they do control all the media. They control academia. They control all that. But now we have a situation where I believe that we're in serious danger in America, because enough people are opting to default to silent, or I'll just ignore it, or I'll put on my blinders. I pretend it isn't going on. But I do believe it's creeping more and more into people's everyday lives and everything.
Well, it's established as the universal standard. The bad news and the good news, though, look at the poll that Scott Adams cited. Now, right. What was the percentage that he said? I think it was 46%.
I think it was 46%. Okay. It was really shocking, too.
46% of the Black community is openly anti-white bigoted. Okay, 46%. Now, That's the bad side. The good side is that's still less than half. And look at the amount that they have been bombarded with in the media and everything else, that there's only one point of view on this, is that, you know, 150 years ago, your great-great-great-grandfather was a slave, and therefore people that weren't even on this continent at the time because of their skin color owe you reparations. I mean, look at the extent of all of this stuff.
Right.
And yet more than half of them don't agree with that.
Right.
And that's where those are the people we go to and say, okay, we do have common ground with you people, because right. You know, the rising tide lifts all boats. Right. If you people want to see a better, and oh my gosh, I said you people, that makes me a bigot. Okay, but
no, that's you people in general to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, if
any division,
if this portion of the Black community wants to see the rising tide that lifts all boats and elevates the culture, elevates the country for them, their children, their grandchildren, we have that unity with this group. Okay. And maybe there are things that we won't always agree on, but if you're going to try to do that for your children and grandchildren, and meanwhile, be the good Democrat, because you've been told by really good, racially open-minded people like Joe Biden, that as a Black, you have to be a Democrat and you're going to follow along with it. Now you're double-minded and we don't have common ground there. So what we've got to do is outreach and say, here's the issues, and here are the goalposts that we're going to establish for where we need to go, and this is the way we're going to take the country. And if they're taking it the other direction, there is a rift there, and frankly, it's becoming a chasm.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because to me, I also I look at it too. Like, I don't care what your race is. I also believe that you should want for your children to have the best qualified teachers, regardless that, you know, and they're really, really pushing. Yeah. A lot of teachers have been forced out a lot for different reasons, but they're really pushing in like, no, they should only have people of color or LGBTQ. And it's like, if I'm a parent of any race, religion, background, I'm thinking, well, no, I want my child best educated. It's just
can you find common ground with people on that?
I think you can, but you know.
No, I'm talking about the people that are saying they want that's the kind of teachers they want. No,
oh no, you can't, because
there is no common ground with those people, because they have an agenda that absolutely eliminates us. Now, using just that, and again, using the Black community and that half of the Black community that more than half that didn't buy the idea that they have a right to be institutionally racist.
Right.
Okay, the best thing we could do for those people is institute vouchers. And every place that they have instituted vouchers in these inner cities, two things have happened. The parents that care about their children have shown up in droves to get their kids signed up. They've stood in line for endless periods of time to get their kids in there. The schools that have actually operated on that basis, the education increases, the kids are more successful. And what happens? Some Democrat, like, for example, Barack Obama, one of the first things he did when he got into the White House was shut down the voucher schools in D.C. The reason he did that was because those kids being well-educated and successful and well-balanced and not consumed with racial bigotry and other venom, those kids were going to be successful in life.
Right.
They don't need Democrats. They don't need a government to spoon feed them, because they can stand on their own two feet. And that made them the enemy.
Yeah, I can't believe that they're against vouchers or charter schools or any of that. And you hear this lunatic, Randy Weingarten, up there last week yelling and screaming about forgiving student loans. And it's like, took me 22 years to pay off my student loans. But there's also something called a commitment, you know, being responsible, all of that, that no longer, that's the equity line. But a lot of these people are coming out of universities with bogus degrees that get that they've learned
fully indoctrinated in leftist ideology.
They want them in. They want them, A, to get their loans paid off, and then B, they're recruiting them into the government. Because I'm sure you saw last week that really disturbing and totally unconstitutional. I do want to ask you about what happened to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. This is all supposed to be illegal already. But so Joe Biden, again, with his diversity, equity, inclusion, most people that watch me know that the person running the, you know, domestic policy, so to speak, is Susan Rice. She's back there in a very powerful position. She's obviously still in bed with Barack Obama and all his friends.
Yeah, that's the whole cabal. Yep.
Yeah, totally. So he puts in last week something I believe is totally illegal and unconstitutional. But that every agency from NASA to the Treasury to the Department of Education, which shouldn't exist, to all these different agencies on every level, that there has to be a diversity, equity, inclusion action plan, a basically a czar at the very top of every institution, science, nature, NIH, everywhere, and that they have to start prioritizing hiring of minorities in all positions before anyone else, because of systematic racism in those areas, So here we go.
It goes back to the same thing.
Right.
I want you to
explain why this is so dangerous and how it's totally unconstitutional, illegal, I think.
It absolutely is. Bigotry is bigotry. I hear the term reverse discrimination, and I understand why people use the term reverse discrimination, but it's just discrimination, okay? This is the really funny part. Go back to that rule of mine about how leftists never really care about any cause they claim to champion. It usually is happening at the bidding of white leftists. And the goal is not to elevate blacks. The goal is to destroy the country by racially dividing us. Okay. This is everything that they do. They have an ulterior motive. You mentioned NASA. Do you remember under Barack Obama when he appointed his NASA administrator? Do you remember what his goal was for the new mission of NASA?
No, this I don't. I'm sure.
Okay, this was while the space shuttle was faltering, and ultimately Obama canceled it. We didn't have any manned space program. And this new administrator, I don't remember his name, but his goal for NASA was Muslim outreach. No, I'm not kidding you. That's not Babylon B. Okay, that is absolutely what happened. And again, everything about these people is to take every situation and exploit it to advance their agenda. Now, for Obama, I have my own feelings about why he's such an advocate of Muslim outreach. I've never seen the guy eat a ham sandwich, I'll be honest with you, and I'll just leave that at that. But as far as empowering the ideological enemies of America, that's what Obama did the whole time. That's what he was about. And I'm absolutely convinced that he's in there with Susan Rice, and that's what he's still about. Okay. And the idea is to, you know, if you look at the amount of racial discord we had before Obama, before 2008, we hadn't had riots since about 1991 with Rodney King. Okay. And all of a sudden we're having riots everywhere, race riots. That was on purpose. That's the Alinsky strategy. You create chaos, you create discord, you get on your moral high ground in the midst of all of this. And the only way for people to be virtuous once you're on your moral high ground is for them to consent and agree with and buy into the leftist strategy. And so that's what all of these things you're describing, that's what this is about, this racial equality thing that you're talking about, the Biden cabal. I think old Joe, they could put that executive order in front of him, or they could put the Magna Carta in front of him, and he would have no idea which one he's signing. But the whole thing is about making sure that everything is fractured in this country along racial lines. This is how they work. The goal is to upend all the things that made America great. You know who it was that signed the Civil Rights Act? They pushed it and got it through the Congress and put the pressure on for it to be signed into law. It was, at the time, the real Republicans. Now, unfortunately, another big topic of mine is rhino cowardice and rhino duplicity. Unfortunately, if they're up to their standard course, if we were to get a good president in 2024, and we were to have solid Republican majorities in both houses, what you would likely see is every effort in the world to prevent that Republican president from rescinding that really despicable executive order on the same grounds that they all couldn't see their way to building the wall when Trump was in, because they're rhinos. They're part of that uniparty. Yeah. They're part of the establishment swamp slash sewer that DC has become. And unless we really deal with that and recognize it for what it is, we don't hide behind party labels. We don't find common ground with those people. We recognize them as the enemy. And once we've tagged them at that, once they've proven themselves to be disloyal on that basis, no future politicking or good sounding speeches or anything from any of them is worthy to get that tag taken off of them, because in the critical moment, they showed which side they were on.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did. And, you know, something I stole from a journalist, I like Norbin Laden. She termed it now, like, forget the rhinos. Now she's like hunting for American rhinos, American in name only, because the whole Uniparty is kind of bought, paid for. I feel like they're captured, that whole DC swamp. Yeah. And, you know, really the think tanks and the NGOs are writing the legislation and the, you know, the Council of Foreign Relations folks and all that. And these people at this point seem like actors and like they're not even these hearings. I'm watching these hearings, and it's fun to see like Kennedy or Jim Jordan or some of these people go and ask like very hard questions. But again, you're talking about these people. I'm watching Merrick Garland in disgust. They're so arrogant, and they act like, you know, they don't understand the question. But these people don't feel the American people deserve an answer.
They don't. Absolutely.
Then,
and I will tell you this:
us, you know,
the arrogance. Let me tell you, the arrogance is 100% deliberate. I'll take you back to a couple of things, a couple of good examples of how they operate.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton didn't sneak off to a hotel somewhere with Monica Lewinsky. It was done in the Oval Office. It was done with an attitude of defiling a sacred institution. Okay. Yeah. During the Obama years, if you remember the times when he would go off to Martha's Vineyard, and 2 hours later, Michelle Obama would leave on a different Air Force One to go meet him in Martha's Vineyard. And people were so outraged and so appalled. How could they do that, waste all that money and energy? That was 100% deliberate. Everything that those people do is orchestrated and for a purpose. The goal of that was to tell us that on the same basis, you would see stuff like that from your tin horn dictators in the third world, where they have their gold-plated cars and stuff like that. That was the Obama White House telling America, you know, we got elected, we can do what we want, you can't do anything about it. And they were royalty, and they weren't going to be held accountable. It was their way of showing us that they were the power. And when you look at these committee hearings and things like that, you see the arrogance. Remember Peter Stroke?
Oh,
remember
yeah.
the way, this childish mockery that I can't even imitate his pathetic
so
faces
bad.
He made, but it was telling the American people, you can't touch me. I can do it right in front of you. You can't touch me. Hillary, what difference does it make?
I know.
Like, yeah, we did it. It happened. What difference does it make? You're not going to touch me. And as long as they can do that, and as long as we respond defensively, they stay in that position.
Right.
Are we going to have a war crimes tribunal for Merrick Garland the first time we're in power? We should. We should have one for traitor General Milley,
who,
frankly, if that ever went to trial, what's that?
He admitted it.
If that ever went to trial, he outclasses Benedict Arnold by quite a bit as far as the greatest traitor in American history. Are we going to actually hold these people accountable? They obviously don't think we will.
Yeah, well, I think that's a big problem with good Americans that are patriots that love this country is the lack of accountability. And this goes all the way back. If you speak to people that are honest about it, the lack of transparency, the fraud that is using reasons of national security, not to protect we the people or our homeland, but to protect criminals in our government, has been going on as long as it's been happening, but certainly back to JFK. And you could just go up the line, and every few years, there's another giant crime committed by our government, not to mention the color revolutions and everything that's going on all over the world. So, you know, that is a real problem, that people feel there will never be accountability. And at this point, people honestly want to see some accountability and some indictments. But again, it seems like we're watching a reality show of Washington, D.C. And even today, as I'm sure you saw. So Chuck Schumer is putting forward yet again statehood for the 10 by 10 parcel of land that is a vassal state known as the District of Columbia to be a full state. So that, again, they can manipulate everything. He's putting it in. And I don't think the people are realizing that it's another play to yet again undermine America. I did a whole show with a great man last week, Richard Poe. We were talking about how kind of during Woodrow Wilson, it was like the UK and the US and their intelligence agencies were all kind of in bed in DC. It doesn't really seem like it's functioning under the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the rule of law, what happened January 6th, a million things. Now they're putting it back on the table. Can you tell me why they're pushing for DC, or tell my audience why they're doing that and the damage that would do?
Let me go back to, I sound like I'm just stumping for my book, which in a sense I am.
Your book's awesome. That's why you're
But that premise that leftists never care about any cause they claim to champion, that just nails it right there. Has Schumer come out, and I will publicly apologize to him if I'm wrong about this, has he come out and said anywhere that we want DC statehood because we want two more senators and I don't know, probably two more Congress people, and we'll have that much more of an ability to ramrod the leftist agenda. If he's come out and said that anywhere, I'm going to have to admit the guy's honest. No, he hasn't. And I'm confident about that. He's given every excuse about representation, et cetera, et cetera. And this is again, this is how they operate. The problem is our side. Don't take this personally. Our side tries to find common ground with them instead of saying, no, you're wrong. Right. There is no common ground here. You people have an agenda. It's anti-American. It's illegal. And we're not going to stand with it. Now, do we have the guts to do that? I don't know, because I guarantee you at some point, if they haven't already done this, that the whole thing of DC statehood and us opposing it is that we're racist. I can hear that right now.
It's gonna be. And with the logic that they're using, then any town or city in America could ask for statehood. I mean, the reasons they're giving are so ludicrous. And what's so scary is I was in DC recently, and let me tell you something. It is, from a distance, it looks great. If you get into DC, it is as bad as the worst parts of New York. It is.
I went there.
It's dirty. They're not taking care of it.
It looks like a war zone.
It does. It really does. And again, when you leave hotels, you know, you're warned like not to go too far and make sure that you're vigilant and don't go out late. I mean, it's like the worst part of New York City, except for it's all concentrated. And then you have all our beautiful buildings around.
Yeah. I was there in the 1990s. So this is almost 30 years ago that I was there. And I remember I was at a Christian Coalition conference, and we were in one of the Senate or House office buildings, all the marble walls and statues everywhere. And then I took a train up out of town for some reason, and I go over to Union Station, and you have never, ever seen such opulence in your life.
I know.
It's just unbelievable. My kids at that point were all probably about 9-10 years old, and they come running to me, Dad, you got to come see in this gift shop. There's back in the 1990s, there's a $250 pen and pencil set. Okay. And they're looking at this, and their jaws are dropping. Well, first of all, that $250 pen and pencil set is going to be something that somebody stopping at the station picks up as a gift to go give a senator that he doesn't have to declare. Okay. Now, number one, exactly. Number two, how can that guy, that lobbyist, whatever, how can he afford that $250 pen and pencil set? Five of the richest counties in the United States are adjacent to DC. Meanwhile, I get on my train finally, and you know, I'm appalled by all this. And we start riding, and within 30 seconds, you go from this marble paradise to, again, a bombed out war zone.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing in DC is the real result of the whole leftist Democrat approach to society, where we don't elevate people to the highest. We don't give them the opportunity to be their best. What we do is we lower everything to a level of equity where they're all have the same results and everything. We can't do it to the upper one because you can't bring everybody up there. So you bring it down to the lowest common denominator.
Yes.
And you said that it's a dump. Well, really we're seeing the same thing now in the so-called private sector, but with the same forces. I just read an article in the past few days where Walmart is completely pulling out of Portland, Oregon. And they are, because it's like, you can't put a store up in a war zone where people are allowed to go in and steal whatever they want. We can't call it theft because that's bigotry. And so what's happening? So have you made society better for these people? No. What you've made is you made it unlivable. Walmart pulls out. Now these people are either going to be on some sort of a black market or they're going to have to travel much further to get stuff that would have been nice if they could have gotten it from their own neighborhood. That's how the whole leftist agenda turns America into a third world country. It doesn't always affect the downtown area of DC. It won't affect that first, but it's affecting things across the country. And you can look at other major cities and see a lot of that same stuff going on.
Yeah, what's scary is that Union Station that was once very opulent is now a homeless shelter, apparently. That's what it looks like.
I'm not surprised at this point.
And you know what, but it also shows the disrespect for DC as it is. It's a total facade. Yeah. Like a lot of things are. And again, you just brought up something I think is really important too, because this is also part of your book. And the reason that I do suggest that people read it, because I just remembered that I have to go back and look at a couple things in there, is because it gives you the ability to also pick and choose your battles. You're very good at saying when it's not worth it, because that's the hard part. It was funny. Yesterday, I was in the airport in D.C., and there was a doctor that was at the conference, and he was talking to one of the women working at the restaurant, and she was asking him about, he's very anti the vaccine. He said he's showing her studies and saying this and that. She'd taken the vaccine. He's kind of telling her, we don't really know what you can do, kind of like that. And some woman next to me, we're in D.C., she goes, oh my God, do you hear what this lunatic is saying? What a sick person. Da, da, da. And she looks at me and she goes, can you believe it? And I go, yeah, I think it's poison too. And she goes, oh. And she like got all her stuff and got up and walked away. And it's just so interesting. This was like a white middle-class woman, probably in her 50s, so sure that everything that she's read about the vaccine and that Joe Biden and all the celebrities are telling her it's safe. She's probably on her second booster. She thinks a doctor who's like credentials are right there. He's talking, he's a recognizable doctor, and that you would see speaking places. And she was just so horrified and then looked at me like I was the devil. And I'm thinking, like, they're so sure. And these aren't the manipulators. These are like the people that they manipulate.
She absolutely right. 100% right, Mel. That is it. They have the school systems, if you remember, back in the 90s, they started this thing on self-esteem. And they pushed self-esteem. And self-esteem was not about, if you're doing a good job, you need to be happy with it and keep doing more of the same. Self-esteem was believing in yourself regardless. And these people, chapters 1 and 2 of my book, by the way, the number one motivator of leftists is their arrogance. And number two, their hypocrisy. Okay. And they literally, when they get their shot, they don't just get their shot and say, okay, I hope it works. They get their shot and they say, I'm a better person than those people around me who didn't. The people that are still wearing the masks. Yeah. and again, this is why when I say it's not a both sides thing, because what we want to do is live our lives. We want to see the country in a prosperous, flourishing, free, law and order state to where we can live our lives. Our children can, our neighbors can, regardless of what color they are. We want to see that happen. What they want to see is the implementation of their power structure with them at the top. It's like the whole carbon footprint thing. You need to walk to reduce your carbon footprint. And I'm going to fly on my private jet to my Enviro conference while we all talk about why you need to walk. But we deserve that because we're the better people. We, the leftists, obviously, we're the better people.
And then they call, I know that they call Republicans also Christian nationals, like those horrible
nationalists, as in a reference to being Nazis.
Right.
Okay. Now, the other part of nationalist that they don't mention in Nazi was nationalist socialist.
Right.
Okay. They gloss over that part. Because not all nationalists are the same. If you're an American patriot, they want to call you a nationalist, fine. You believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. All men are created equal. Government is there to protect the rights of all. Right. Equality under the law. We can go down the list, freedom of speech, the Bill of Rights, things. If you're an American patriot and they call you a nationalist, that's what they're actually accusing. Right. If you're a Soviet nationalist, a German Nazi nationalist, that's a whole different thing. But they're going to try and morally equate the two things. And our side, like a bunch of lemmings, a bunch of sheep, our side reacts defensively. Of note to Americans, right. Underline this. The minute you react defensively to a false accusation, you validated the accusation. I don't care how ridiculous it is. And as long as we fall into that, we're putting them in the driver's seat. And so if they say nationalist, my response is, I'm a patriot. If you don't like that, go to another country that you can be happy with, because my America, with our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and the other things we talked about, it was a good place to be, and it will be again if we can get you lunatics out of positions of power.
Totally. Totally. And it's amazing, because here's another one for you. So I'm watching Jill Biden, possibly, first of all, I can't even believe that any family member, let alone the wife of this man who's obviously unwell, is acting as if. I mean, this seems like it's just so disgusting to watch. But at the same time, so she's in an interview. I don't know why she, you know, Dr. Jill Biden. if anyone's read her PhD from University of Delaware, surprise, surprise, where the Biden, archives are. Right. But it's off the charts insane. And it's about equity and education back then from her. But she's in an interview and she said she's putting down Donald Trump and his foreign policy of no wars and pulling us out of wars and auditing the military industrial complex and a lot of things he was planning to do that he was not allowed and stopped. Right. But she said, well, we don't want to be isolationists like the last regime. We are globalists. She admits it. She says,
she actually said globalists.
Yes. She said, we're global citizens in this country.
And I remember Obama, citizen of the world, same thing. That's interesting.
Now, people, here's the thing though, that I want you to define here, because you're great at this. Isolationists. So what is she? So she's putting out that by being America, she's putting down America first, putting down Donald Trump's policy, and she's calling Donald Trump and his policies isolationists. Nobody ever said that America was going to just shut out the rest of the world. It's so insane. What is she saying right there for the decode, the insanity?
Okay, let's go back to the Alinsky strategy.
Yes.
Okay, the first thing they've got to do is they've got to claw their way onto their phony moral high ground. Right. Every issue that they have, I wrote a chapter on labels and mantras, and the chapter on labels was talking about how they identify heroes and villains before the conversation ever starts. Okay, you'll never hear a leftist say, a pro-lifer. They're always anti-abortion, because that way you're a bad guy. You're against something. Okay. And I'll be honest with you now, I look back with some regret that I didn't throw in isolationists, because that's a great example. What is the alternative? Are you for women's rights or are you pro-life? Well, wait a second. That's a false choice. Okay. But if they couch it that way, and if you accept it that way, now you're on this defensive ground where you lose. Okay. So are you for taking care of fellow people in need around the world, or are you an isolationist? Okay. And it's a way of couching the situation. So if you accept that premise, you're in a no-win situation. Okay. Now, isolationism, the real definition of isolationism is if we as a country see an evil force advancing around the world and we turn a blind eye to it. Okay. Their definition of isolationism is if we don't empower this globalist monster that wants to be the master of the world, and we don't abandon our national borders, because you're a nationalist at that point, you know, you're a bigot. Let's go down the list here. If you know, I heard something the other day that global warming was a result of bigotry or something.
It's totally turned into like now social justice and racial justice are now in bed with global warming.
And they're going to be
a beautiful thing,
because in all honesty, they're all in service to the same ultimate master. And we won't go there in too much detail at the moment, but yeah, they will couch things this way. The idea that unless you give all kinds of money to Joe Biden's buddies in Ukraine so they can all enrich themselves. Right. You're an isolationist and you don't care about the people of Ukraine. Well, wait a minute. That's not really what we're talking about here. From their perspective, every issue is going to be reworked until you're on the defensive, securing the border. It's like that is such a basic common sense thing. You know, the only thing I can think of that's even more common sense than securing our national border is the idea that a man with male body parts is a man and a woman with female body parts is a woman. And so there's no argument there, right? Oh, well, forget it. There's a leftist. There's an argument.
Exactly.
But the idea that unless you accept their premise, then you're this bad thing, be it isolationist, bigot, homophobe, you know, anti-trans, et cetera.
There's so many more. Misogynist, ableist.
Oh, yeah.
I like the ableist.
Ableist. Yeah, I've heard that one. And again, part of the Alinsky strategy, then we're going to attach a bunch of consequences to what you said. You're the reason that Matthew Shepard got murdered because you don't agree that that drag queen should be in the first grade trying to entice your kid into perverse sexual activity.
It goes that far. You're totally
right. It does go that far. And if we react defensively to this stuff and we try to, you know, to try to find some reason with these people, what we're doing is we're opening that floodgate. You know, we're unequally yoked with these people at that point. And unequally yoked does not mean we're lifting them up. It means they're dragging us down.
Right. That's so important to really get out there, I think. Because when we talked about what we were going to talk about, I asked you that and you said, I'm not sure what that means. And now you've helped me reformulate, because I think people are kind of thinking, like, how are we ever going to like unite again? What are we going to do? And what you're saying is so important. There is a group of people that don't want that at all. That's not what they want.
They are adamantly opposed to it.
Right.
Yeah. I wrote a recent piece, and I don't know if I sent it to you or not. If I didn't, send it about the fact that without a moral cohesion,
right, you did. Yeah.
Any kind of self-government fails. And guess what? That's the goal. You look at, for example, our foreign policy right now. If we can get the strongest Ronald Reagan pro-America president in 2024, and the Afghan people who want freedom won't trust us. Why? Because they don't know what's going to happen in 4 years. And again, the Afghan disaster of 2 years ago, 100% deliberate, was to show those people you can't trust America, period. It was done to destroy America's standing on the world stage. And I will throw in this little extra tidbit. There's one person I've ever seen who really wanted to do everything in his power to fundamentally transform America's image around the world by destroying it. And I'm convinced that he was behind that. So unless we have a moral cohesion where we have, and you know, forget the current political parties, forget right and left. You have good people that have maybe one economic viewpoint, and you have good people who have a varying economic viewpoint. They have differing parties, and they're trying to do things in the ways that they really sincerely see as best for the country. Mm-hmm. And their goal is to do what will be best for America. Unless we have that kind of a foundation, which means taking things back to our national founding, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, the Judeo-Christian principles on which they were founded, unless we have that kind of moral cohesion, then the democratic process, as they call it, you're going to have something between evil prevailing, and if you occasionally have good prevail, then things start to pick up only long enough until evil can dominate again, and then it falls apart. The country is slamming back and forth from left to right, and it's tearing us apart internally. Exactly. It's also destroying us on the world stage.
Exactly.
With that in mind, the good news is what we've seen coming out of Asbury, Kentucky. Okay, because you're seeing a moral, spiritual revival, and it's spiritual.
Oh, right,
first.
You're talking about that. I forgot for a second. I thought you were. I'm thinking Wyoming. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. Let me go back to Wyoming in a minute here, if we have time.
Sure.
But the morality that they are ascribing to can only be consistent if it comes from spiritual truth, from biblical truth, and that's what you're seeing starting to happen in Kentucky. And frankly, I will tell you, all over the place, I know of little prayer circles breaking out all over, and we need to be back to Second Chronicles 7:14. We need to be seeking God and turning from our wicked ways and praying.
Agree.
Okay. And so that can bring about the national unity.
Yeah.
As long as we're not double-minded.
Right.
Again, scripture warns against being double-minded.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be trying to be moderate enough and palatable enough to where that God-hating leftist Marxist who wants that one world globalist government is going to try and find some unity he can find with me, because we're not going to find that. I've got to recognize that, he's the enemy until he changes.
Yeah. And it kind of puts you in a position of weakness. Like you prove very easily, very handily in your book that once you give them an inch, they go right in.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're in defensive, then you lose. The one last thing, I'm going to have you back because I have other questions, but.
Oh, okay. Well, wonderful. I love it.
But one last thing I want to ask you, because I have multiple people in my life who've done this. I have a very good friend, famous comedian, Roseanne, that was
canceled. Oh, yes.
She did not do anything wrong. She wrote a tweet. It was not about racism. It was about Iran and an Iranian woman. It had nothing to do with, you know, what they said it did. Her life was destroyed overnight. She was forced to apologize. She regrets apologizing. Just mm-hmm. this week, the Raptors, I guess the basketball team, somebody on their team said something about that only a woman could have give birth. They came out with it with an apology.
You have to apologize for telling the truth about a right. thing like that. That would have been a joke only 10 years ago that you apologized yeah. for that.
So here's what I'm saying to you, and I want your the last thing I want to ask you to give your opinion on is, so a lot of people, they immediately feel like when they're called a racist or they're called a misogynist or they're called whatever name they want to throw at you, the immediate reaction is, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I offended yep. you. But then the sorry, as I watched with Roseanne, becomes an admission of the guilt before one even has the time to even process. Then it's put out there in the news, just like Scott Adams. They wanted him to apologize and he wouldn't, which I'm glad. But what I'm saying is, you do put out in your book that once you say you're sorry, they kind of win when you're not sorry.
They win. You have admitted guilt. There is actually something going on. I got among my notes here. There was a down in Texas, a coach that said something to a kid quoting the Bible to a kid on the team who was having a hard time obeying authority. And he said something to him and the kid filed some sort of protest. It was racial, blah, blah, blah. And this guy, the Texas staff, the administration of the university, said he apologized. He said, no, I didn't. I didn't apologize. I didn't say anything wrong. If I'm apologizing, I'm admitting I said something wrong. Right. By the way, you do need to get a copy of my book to Roseanne, because I think she would like that. Rule number one, if we don't apologize to them, then we don't empower them to have that phony, moral high ground over us. If we apologize on any spurious basis, oh, I'm sorry I offended you. Right. You know what? If you got offended for me telling the truth, you've got a problem with the truth. I can't apologize for the truth because that would be a lie.
Okay. Yeah.
That is probably more empowering to the left than any other thing that we can do. Now, everything else always leads back to that, because the idea is to get them on their moral high ground where they're doing what's good for the country. You know, they're not facilitating an invasion of the United States of America. They're helping dreamers. We're the ones that are trying to put dreamers in cages, you know, and we could go down the list. Everything that they do, they don't ever deal in honesty. They deal in their propaganda that puts them on that moral high ground while they're actually doing things that are hideous to innocent people and to our country.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because it reminds me of I've had on a lot of January 6ers, people that did not enter the Capitol and are facing 10 years. I know I've had on two guys that are still in jail 700 days plus without being charged.
Okay, absolutely. It's like, where's the Constitution? Well, look, it's been trashed a long time ago.
And they want to give statehood to DC that would do that to humans in America. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. But the sad part about that situation, too, is a lot of people couldn't. First of all, there's a lot of people that are being held. I believe I know why, in the gulag, that have not seen a lawyer. Habeas corpus suspended. Everything suspended. They're treating them like terrorists. It is disgusting. I believe Google learned the truth. Just keep praying for those people. But a lot of people were talked into taking a plea, and the same thing happened to them. Because
that's a great example. You know, that's an excellent parallel to it. Copping a plea when you didn't do something wrong.
Right. And they didn't. And what happened was, because it's DC and because it's so corrupt and because it's a one party town, because they needed an insurrection because of the 14th Amendment, that was the goal. The bottom line is that hundreds and hundreds of people pled guilty without realizing that they are now going to be on a list for life unless we get an appeal and pardons and get this turned around and the truth about January 6th comes out, and they all have civil rights cases. But they the public defenders, a lot of these people were just moms and pops from all over the country that came in, not mm-hmm. just all right, not just all Trump supporters. They all knew, they just were protesting the fraudulent elections that have been going on for decades, a lot of people. So yeah. they were there, but they pled. And they, I found out after, a lot of them didn't know that that would not only say that not it, a lot of them are misdemeanors, but it would put them on a list as domestic terrorists. And insurrections.
Yeah. And, life. And look at the real terror going on in this country, the Antifa and everything else that they still haven't identified as terrorists.
They don't
and
care. Merrick Garland said he doesn't care. It happened at night.
Yeah. Yeah. As if crimes had happened at night are not somehow crimes. But again, you know, leftists will claw their way onto that phony moral high ground by any means. The one thing we have got to do is start by recognizing who they are and how they operate. And again, my goal is to get our people to stand on truth and stay the course. That's a simple goal. You have to understand that they have 1,000 different ways of getting you off of that, because they're not going to come. You know, Alinsky did not write rules for the majority on how to institute utopia. He wrote rules for radicals. How do you institute this system, this radical system, the phony promises that people are quickly going to realize are phony? And how do you do it using a fringe of fanatical, morally debased, corrupt people? And that's how they operate. And if we try to play with them, now we don't play their battle by their rules, but if we try to play according to within the framework that they dictate to us, we're going to lose, because they dictate that framework with that intent. That's how they created it.
Right. And you got to remember, the Rules to Radicals was dedicated to the original radical Lucifer. So, you know, we're not playing with a godly equal folks. We're playing with deceivers.
It's amazing how much of Alinsky's book you see this stuff in here of where he's just Mr. Nice Guy going to do all these good things. Well, if he was going to do really good things, he didn't have to use vile, evil liars and brutes and intimidators to accomplish it. No, he wasn't doing good things, and he knew it. Whether or not he was actually a Satanist, I don't know. I don't think he was. I think that was just an attempt on his part to be really outrageous and provocative with us. But that's who he was ultimately serving, and I make no bones about that.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter, because the people like Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Cass Sunstein and all these people, they idolized him anyway. So they probably thought it was very cute that Lucifer was the original rebel, the original radical, just like them, right?
Birds of a feather, absolutely. I don't know, is that a racist, sexist, or something? But birds of a feather, they're all the same thing. And again, there is no common ground with those people. And as our society progresses down this road, the chasm gets bigger and bigger. We've got to reach those ones who thought that maybe they had these utopian promises were a good thing, but they're really not seeing the result of those things. They're starting to see the bombed out back streets of DC, and they're seeing Portland disintegrate and stuff. Those are the people we got to reach, because they had good intentions. They were either naive or some of them, they were, morally directionless and things like that. We've got to reach those people, but we're not going to do it if we give any credence to the actual perpetrators of this whole movement.
That's absolutely true. Chris Adamo, I think you're awesome. And
thank you.
I have to have you back, because I thought of 10 other things I want to talk about. So we'll schedule you again soon.
Schedule me as soon as possible. Let me know when, because I'll plan on it.
I need you to help me decipher things as we go. So you'll be back as soon as I have my next thing, which will probably be in a few days. And also,
I'm more than happy.
Great. And also, how can people get in touch with you, find your book, follow you? This book is great for everyone. Anyone out there trying to navigate the world in this insanity. But I really recommend it if you have children in high school, college, grad school, whatever, because it really does give you a lot of tools to interact without losing your ground.
I'd like to add one real quick thing to that, if I may, for those parents looking at sending their kids off to college, is, and I want to just reiterate, I said this last time, that if you go into a room with a professor and this professor is the enlightened teacher who's going to elevate you and elevate your intellect and everything, you have one attitude towards him. If you go into that room realizing that what you're seeing is a propagandist,
Right.
The minute you know he's a propagandist, you're much better armed against this person to discern between what he's telling you that's fact and what he's telling you that's fiction. So that's where these kids, they need to be reading this and to learning who these people are before they go into their presence. Because right. frankly, especially in modern U.S. high-level academe, you're violating the first verse in the book of Psalms to be there. You're walking in the counsel of the unrighteous. And it's not a good thing under any circumstances, but if you know that that's who they are and what they are and what their real agenda is, then you're at least somewhat forewarned against them.
Right, right on. We'll put the link to your book below, and can people follow you anywhere?
I think yes, Twitter and Truth Social. Great. It's at CG Adamo, at CGADAMO. And I'll be honest, I love talking with people. I love sharing ideas, you can tell. And yeah, so, by the way, I don't think you followed me on Twitter yet, but you need to fix that. But
I think I did.
Oh, okay. Well, good. All right. We'll catch up then. Okay.
Well, whatever. I had to start from zero on Twitter. I never got my account back for some reason. I've watched everyone. I'm still waiting. So I started from zero. So that's a good thing for me to remind my audience. I'm just newly back on Twitter. It's a virtual account. The Mel Kay Show, at Mel Kay Show, because they didn't give me back the Mel Kay Show. So no the. And Chris Adamo, you're awesome. I'll see you again soon. Thank you for your brilliance. And you're helping me a lot. Honestly, I'm learning a lot from you. I appreciate it.
I really appreciate that. You take care.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and my employees and I want to thank each and every one of you for your continued support. With everything going on right now, your rest is so important. That's why we're having the biggest MyPillow sale ever. Not only are my bed pillows as low as $19.98, but you can get the best body pillows ever. Regular $89.98, now only $29.98. Take your rest on the go with our Roll and Go Anywhere My Pillows for only $14.98. And we have our new couch and accent pillows. They aren't just for looks. They have MyPillow's patented adjustable fill that gives you that amazing MyPillow comfort. In this economy, you get the best gifts ever for the best prices ever. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code and you get deep discounts on body, couch, bolster pillows, and so much more, including my original bed pillows for as low as $19.98. Please order now while quantities last.
Hey, it's Andrew Sorcini at Beverly Hills Precious Metals. I'm here at the Mel Kay Show. Last year, we helped so many patriots out there protect themselves against inflation with gold and silver. In 2023, we can show you how to preserve what you have, avoid further loss, and position you for greater things for your investments. So the best way for us to help you is for you to go to MelKGold.com, fill out the online form, and put in as much information about yourself as you possibly can. The more information, the more we can help you. So do it right away. The time is crucial as we head into central bank digital currencies. We can show you how to protect your 401k or your IRA, and the costs are minimal.
Hello, Patriot Pals. I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about our amazing partner, Mel Kay Superfoods. A lot of people do the food prep programs that they come in, you know, freeze-dried and all of that. This is not that. This is a full serving of fruits and vegetables and protein. It is a way to maintain a healthy diet no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, no matter what happens in this country. Because again, it's very affordable, and at the same time, it's very easy to follow, and it is like having a full garden outside your house that you're going and picking fresh fruit and fresh vegetables every single day. You have that same nutrients inside your cupboard. You know, prepare now, be ready. A lot of people do prepping stuff. This is an excellent way to prep to make sure that you and your family always have the essential nutrients that you need to live a healthy, full life out there. Please check out Mel Kay Superfoods. We're loving the program. We'd love for you to join us. Please get in touch with the show if you're having benefits from the Superfoods program at Mel Kay Superfoods. We'd love to hear from you. Go to MelKaySuperfoods.com and join me in supercharging our wellness journey and living our best, healthiest lives ahead.